Wendy and Tom Holder.
Should have a copy of.
Yes, we do.
Of my, what I'm going to tell you today.
Yep.
Good morning and welcome. We've read the original submission, which was very brief, but thank you very much for that. And I see you have tabled some material. Ideally, that would have been pre-circulated in accordance with our timeframes. But
that's just going to be what I say.
Yeah. So you're just going to read that to us?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Well, that's fine.
So thank you for this opportunity to speak to our submission. I offer an apology from Tom. He's on a run of night shifts at present. Tom and I appreciate that you've taken the time to consider our opinion and implemented some of the changes we have suggested. Today I wish to briefly cover two of the major components of the South and Water and Land Plan, freshwater and physiographic zones. But first, I'll tell you a little about background. Tom and I own a 70 hectare farm and property at Branxholme. We are the third generation of my family on this property, following my father and grandfather, who purchased the property in 1932. The property has been farmed intensively throughout these past 85 years, including dairying, as per your photo there, number one, sheep and beef, intensive cropping of wheat and barley, back to sheep and deer, and currently has 25% in potatoes and 75% leased to dairy support. Historically, properties of our size were able to support a family. Southland was dotted with milk and cheese factories. But like our family, many have had to adapt, change their modes of production and practice and their practice to continue to provide a relevant income. Tom and myself both work off-farm to supplement our income. We have three married children and three grandchildren living in the Mount Maunganui. To address the water component of the plan, we're all aware of the life-sustaining nature of fresh water. What I noticed as I waded through 706 pages of the 42A report was how many businesses, companies and individuals were vying for their rights to fresh water, to keep existing water consents, to attain water for their use and to maintain the value of fresh water. The Water and Land Plan in its current form discriminates between those who have water consents and those who may wish to attain water consents in the future. This inequity is divisive, and indeed, this inequity is divisive, and indeed will alter values of properties and their production capabilities. Ultimately, the ability of some farmers to maintain a relevant income and eventually the economic well-being of Southland in the farming capacity will be affected. Disparity already exists. An example from a personal point of view, please see photo 2 there. This is our domestic water supply on a good day in Te Anau, for which we pay $455.77 per year. Please see photo 3. This is a farm on the Branxholme Strait, wasting water for which they pay nothing. And a potential future example of this might look like Farm A, 200 hectares, water consent of 180,000 litres per day, higher production, therefore more income, and therefore a higher land value. The neighbouring property right next door is Farm B with the same number of hectares, 200 hectares, unable to get water consent because the allocation is full. Lower productivity equals less income, and therefore a lower farm value. To value water, water has to be given a value. In our submission, we suggested Environment Southland see that water is allocated equally and consistently to all in Southland for their reasonable and efficient use. We suggested water should be metered and charged for at a per litre rate. We first suggested this at the draft water plan hearings. We haven't seen any evidence that this has been adequately researched and assessed by Environment Southland. In response to our submission, the 42A report suggests that there are legislative reasons Environment Southland is unable to charge for water, citing section 14.3b of the Resource Management Act as the reason.
Yeah, and you don't need to read that out.
Okay, you're not?
With that,
okay.
Yep, absolutely.
We don't understand this legislative reason. Mr McKellen stated at the draft water and land plan hearing that water takes and consents are metered already. How hard would it be to calculate the water take share of a landholding's reasonable needs and charge for water over and above this level, or allocate an amount of water to each landholding, and those that require more could trade within the FMU, similar to the New Zealand Emissions Trading Scheme. Auckland ratepayers pay per litre for fresh water into their dwelling and pay per litre again for wastewater out. Mount Maunganui ratepayers also pay per litre of fresh water into their dwellings. This approach gives accountability to the consumer. In the guide to section 32 of RMA, it states the councils are to identify a variety of response options. One of the examples given is, quote, the provisions or methods used by other local authorities to manage the same issue. If water rates were payable per litre used in Southland, it would bring every Southlander under a fair and equal umbrella. Politicians are now bringing water charges to our attention as a way forward. They are recognising the need to protect our fresh water resource. Let Environment Southland not be found behind the eight ball again, this time. Let this be your watershed moment. To address the physiographic zones, we raise the issue of physiographic zones as we don't believe the methodology has been proven, and the zones themselves are a sweeping generalisation of soil types within Southland. Also, we see Environment Southland itself has written exemptions to the rule. Our own property at Branxholme is classified to be in the oxidising and glade zones. We have no tile drains. We have the Tomaparaka Creek running directly through our property. The creek has been fenced and partially planted as per an Environment Southland plan 25 years ago. We have no risk of flooding. If you look at the map, number 4 there, you will see our property is opposite the new dairy hub, which is also classified in the oxidising and glade zones and bounded by the Makariwa River. In the proposed water and land plan policy 16.1 A and B, it strongly discourages any new or further intensification of dairy farming, and rules 22 and 23 put restrictions on land use. Yet the dairy hub was exempt of these rules, as in the clause G in both 22 and 23. We find Environment Southland's exemptions for the dairy hub to be hypocritical. The point we wish to make is either Environment Southland sees fit to make exemptions to the rules and is therefore biased, which would indicate their priority may not be to protect the environment but to satisfy the legislative requirements of the Resource Management Act, or that the methodology behind physiographic zones is unproven and Environment Southland honestly believes that to not adhere to the rules is not going to cause any further deterioration in Southland's water quality. Either way, it would be good to receive their explanation as to which is actual. Southland ratepayers expect that Environment Southland is there to protect the environment. We understand the authority of the 42A report has recommended the removal of exemption clauses for the dairy hub, but this doesn't remove the intent. In summary, from the Southland Water and Land Plan and the 42A report, it is clear that those who currently have water and discharge consents are the haves. The rest of us are the have-nots. And rules around physiographic zones will restrict farm productivity going forward, affecting land values. To quote Gary Garner on real estate matters, on the basis that land value is closely linked to its productive capacity, the value of land is also potentially affected since the management systems and farm inputs are constrained. Moreover, farms are typically bought and sold on the basis of their perceived productive capacity, since profitability is a reflection of productivity. Some commentators would suggest that farmland values could be reduced significantly, unquote. Maybe Environment Southland can understand the rising stress levels within the farming community. Not only is the farmer's livelihood affected, but also their retirement fund. And the irony of it is most of these farmers have not been the major contributors to the freshwater decline. Finally, I just want to point out that Mr. McCallum is in the category of having consents. We suggest his position on the hearing committee appears a conflict of interest.
Thank you for that. Just taking up that last point first, I need to be clear in my mind if you're making a formal complaint in that regard or not.
Yes.
Okay, so if you're making a formal complaint, you need to more fully explain the basis for your complaint to me.
Well, the land and water plan is very clear on whether there should be any more dairy farms in Southland, and it strongly discourages them. Mr. McCallum is a well-established dairy farm. I believe he's a good dairy farmer, a very well-established dairy farmer, and therefore it puts his farm in a different position to the person that maybe in 10 years' time wants to convert to dairy and can't. So therefore, what's going to be perceived is the land values of dairy farms, even though they're right next door to people who haven't got water consents and discharge consents, will have a higher value.
So is it your proposition?
And a higher income, sorry, too.
So is it your proposition to us that Commissioner McCallum is conflicted because he may wish to ensure that no other farms can convert to dairy farms, therefore giving him a privileged position in the commercial market?
No. I'm saying that maybe Mr. McCallum's in conflict because this land and water plan leans heavily towards those that already have. So it's a pecuniary advantage.
Well, you've raised a further issue now. Why is it a pecuniary advantage?
Well, that's what I said. Because he can have higher productivity, because he's already got consents to water and discharge, and so he can have higher productivity plus his land values, and this was quoted from a media article that the land values are going to be perceived to be higher even though they're right next door to a similar property.
All right, thank you for that. I think we understand your concerns. We won't address those now.
Yep, that's fine.
Something we will deal with in due course. You raised the issue of water charging, and mm-hmm. you quoted some examples from urban authorities.
Yep.
I'm not sure if you're aware or not, but the water charges urban authorities levy are not for the water. Let me finish. The charges that they levy are for the cost of providing the infrastructure to get the water to the household. So in those urban centres that you refer to, Auckland, Tauranga, the water charges are merely covering the cost of the pumps and the pipeworks. There's no charge for the actual water. There's no ability under the RMA for this council to impose a charge on water.
May I respond?
Well, you can, but if you like.
Because when you give a consumer the accountability for what they do with their 1 litre of water, then the consumer takes that accountability. And so they don't leave their hose dripping.
Well,
they don't let their water...
I thought you were going to respond to the legal issue. Legally, we can't do what you're asking us to. That's what I want you to know. Understand why you want us to do what you want us to do, but we can't legally do that.
Would you be able to summarise that and give it to me?
No, that's not our role. I'm just letting you know we have no legal authority to impose a charge on water. So. Now, see if we have any other questions for you.
The only question I have, Mr. Chairman, is that you raise effectively grandparenting, understand the issue, and I think we're all looking for that to be resolved. It's a bigger, wider issue, and I think probably in the next day's limit setting that'll be addressed more fully, but I understand what you've raised there, and I've taken it as a grandparenting issue. So thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Wanted to dig into the inequity about water rights. Is that a generic view you have, or have you as your commercial operation applied for a water right and not been able to get it?
It's a generic.
Okay.
But also a personal issue in that we cannot get water in Te Anau. So we will be having to apply for a water consent to put down a well to supply a dwelling.
So you have a dwelling, you don't have a farming operation?
We have a 5-acre.
Okay. Farm. Thank you. You haven't finished?
No, no questions.
Thank you. So I have one which is similar to others, but I think a wee bit different enough for me to ask it. It's a bit of a long one, but I want to preface by saying you appear to want to call in or cancel consents that are considered to be causing over-allocation of the resource, but express concerns about new rules that attempt to reduce ongoing or new adverse effects. So can you elaborate more on this with more detail, specifically with suggestions on how this could be done without taking away the existing legal rights that people have and without allowing further deterioration of water quality?
Well, that was why I introduced the idea of something like the allocating amounts of water to each property based on their natural stock carrying capacity, because it's 250 litres per stock, per hectare. Mm. So stock carrying capacity on a hill farm is going to be a lot less than stock carrying capacity on a smaller Southland Plains farm. And that's why I introduced the idea of having a trading scheme so that people are able to get their water supply that they need if they want to have a big dairy farm by trading with neighbours who don't need all the water that's been allocated. So it gives a fair umbrella that everybody in Southland has access to the same amount of water.
Okay, thank you.
Right, thank you. I have no further questions. Thank you very much for coming in and taking the time to make the views known to us.
Thank you.